You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
And we're back live. We've been out riding the range the last 3 weeks, and we're just delighted that you've joined us and that we're back again for this week's special episode. What do we have happening tonight, honey?
We have a lot of writers.
We have a room full of writers. We're so excited. But first up, it must be the first Thursday of the month because Henry Park is joining us. Tell everybody a little something about Henry.
Henry, I'll tell you, Henry is a Western Films editor for True West Magazine and writes a blog, Henry's Western Roundup. Henry, what's happening in the Western world of film and TV right now?
Well, it's, and thank you for that plug, yes. It's not been a hugely active month, but there have been some very good developments. If you have Amazon, I strongly recommend you check out The English, the new limited series from the BBC and Amazon. Have you seen that yet?
We have been watching that. It's really gripping.
I've only seen the first episode. For folks who have not caught it yet, it stars and is produced by Emily Blunt as an Englishwoman who comes to the American West to find and punish the man who killed her son. It's a 6-part limited series. I just saw the first episode. I really enjoyed it. Her co-star is Chaskey Spencer. I was not familiar with him, but he's in all of the Twilight movies, playing Sam Uli or Yuli. Here he's playing a Pawnee who's quit being an Army scout and who is going to help her track the bad guys down. So how many episodes have you seen? I've just seen the one.
I think we've seen three. And the first two we watched, like, not binge, but, you know, one right after the other.
Right.
And then I said, I have to have a little break. So then we went back for number three. And yeah, we've really enjoyed it.
Very good. As I say, what I've seen, I've enjoyed very much. Now there's a brand new horror film, Western out on Prime for $5 called Night of the Tommyknockers. Do you know what a Tommyknocker is?
Tell us, because I don't want to guess incorrectly.
Okay. Well, I never heard of them, except I knew there was a Stephen King novel called that, but it's an old legend among Welsh miners. And it's now believed all through Great Britain and by some people here that, the Tommyknockers, these fellows that are kind of like leprechauns that live in mine tunnels, and they make knocking sounds to warn if a mine collapse is coming. So they're generally seen as good guys. But anyway, Richard Greco and his gang have just violently robbed a bank right off ahead of a posse and end up in a gold mining town run by Marshal Tom Sizemore, which is being besieged by the Tommyknockers. I was at the cast screening, and the director explained that since the literature doesn't say what the Tommyknockers look like, they let the effects crew use their imagination.
Oh.
So they look a lot more like hairy mummies than the guy on the Lucky Charms box. But it's goofy, but the filmmakers know it's goofy, with good effects, good art direction, very good actors, and a witty script. So it's goofy, but it's a lot of fun. Now, next Tuesday, Nicolas Cage's first Western, The Old Way, is coming out. They just posted the trailer, and it looks very good. He's an outlaw who became a family man for the love of a good woman, who was then killed. So now he's out for vengeance with his daughter in tow. It also stars Clint Howard, Nick Searcy, and Eddie Spears. Anyhow, it's going to be out next Tuesday. I assume that means it's going to be available some way online, because otherwise it would be, you know, like a Friday or Saturday if it was opening in theaters. Have you guys caught any of Walker Independence on the CW?
No.
No, we haven't.
Okay, that's just the way Taylor Sheridan spun 1883 out of Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. The makers of Walker, which is a reboot of Walker, Texas Ranger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they've spun off a period Western about Walker's ancestors.
Oh.
I just saw the first episode, and in a nutshell, I was not impressed. But I thought I should give it another chance. And of course, because it's a continuing story, I said, well, darn, now it's too late. But they've run the first 7 episodes, and they're all streaming for free at the CW site. So I'm going to give it another chance, and anyone who'd like to can do so. And the series picks up with episode 8 sometime in January. And I've got some personal good news, which is I have a book deal.
Yay!
All right. Okay.
In the spring of 2024, Two Dot Books will bring out what is tentatively titled The Greatest Westerns Ever Made, based on my columns for True West. So.
Right.
Yes, and I think in your blog spot, you said it'll be out in plenty of time for holiday gift giving 2024.
Right. Yeah, boy, doing books, as you guys know much better than me, takes a long time. Because when they first told me, I said, you mean 2023, right? I said, no, it takes a while, Henry.
Well, that's exciting news. And Two Dots, terrific. That should be really great for you.
Thank you. I'm very excited. I have a number of friends who've worked with them. And so they said, you know, you're very lucky.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, speaking of which, folks, please check out the December True West. I believe you held that up.
Yes, we did.
With my article on Jeremiah Johnson, the best mountain man movie ever made.
I agree with you, Henry. That was a heck of a movie.
Isn't that good?
Yes.
And check out my newest INSP blog on the westerns of Robert Taylor, which is, you know, it's funny. Now we've got two really fine actors named Robert Taylor who do westerns, just to confuse things, because we're the Australian guy who started Longmire, and then the MGM guy. My newest Henry's Western Roundup, which I just posted this weekend. Yes, he's posting it again, which features my interview with Tom Wopat, talking about Dukes of Hazzard, his westerns, and his new County Line film series that he's been doing for INSP. And you can read all about this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Oh, Henry, the blogspot was really interesting. I read a lot of it. And, you know, you're going to think this is funny, but I had no memory of Tom Wopat being on Dukes of Hazzard, but I remembered him with Bernadette Peters in Annie Get Your Gun. So I knew about the musical part of his career and had no clue about it.
It's funny because I was not aware of he's like just, since Dukes of Hazzard, he's done a dozen musicals on Broadway, and he had done several before. I had no idea. And my sister, who she and her husband really haunt Broadway, said, oh, we've seen him half a dozen times. And
so fun. Yeah. Well, stay around, Henry, because we're going to bring on our next guests. And tonight, we really have something very special for you all. There's just something magical that happens when wordsmiths get together and they chat about writing and the writing process. And with that in mind, we invited a Rendezvous with a Writer past guest, poet Tom Swearingen, to join us and bring along a couple of his favorite fellow writers who also turn out to be mutual friends of ours. And he's going to introduce them in just a moment. But let me tell you just a little bit about Tom, who's just appeared on the screen. He's an award-winning cowboy poet, just named for the second time. The 2022 goes along with his 2019 International Western Music Association Male Poet of the Year Award. And his first collection of poems, Jim's holding it up right now, Reflection, was named the 2020 Poetry Book of the Year. Sharing that honor with one of tonight's guests, Doc Mel, author of Good Medicine, Read Two Poems and Call Me in the Morning. Tom tells the stories of people and land of the American West through original cowboy poetry that is often inspired by his own experiences and observations from the saddle. Welcome back, Tom.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate being back on and the opportunity to introduce my friends Doris Daly and Doc Mel. And I think they're going to probably pop up on screen here in a moment. There they come.
Here they are.
Yeah. So let me for people who aren't familiar with Doris and Doc, let me read a little bit about them. So talk about Doris first. Book Riot magazine describes Doris Daly as a, quote, cowboy poetry powerhouse, end quote. And that's for sure. She's a favorite with those familiar with her sparkling wordsmithing and girl next door stage presence. She grew up on a family ranch and has spent the past 25 years on stages throughout the U.S. and Canada. Top Western performer Waddy Mitchell. And for those of you who don't know Waddy Mitchell, he is a top performer. He's at the top of the heap, co-founder of the National Cowboy Poetry Gathering. Waddy says of her, if cowboy poetry was fresh milk and the cream that rises to the top was the best of the cowboy poets, then Doris Daly would be very rich and very fattening. Great quote. Her books of original Western poetry include Westward Ho and poems from the Million Star Resort. Her most recent book is a lighthearted compendium of life's many lessons titled That's a Good Answer. And you can find out more about Doris, including a TEDx talk that she gave on her website, dorisdaly.com. It's great to see you from Canada there, Doris. And recently transplanted from Colorado to Black Diamond, Alberta, Canada, is Doc Mill, who weaves the history and mystery of the West into his original West eclectic poetry and music. His poems and musical lyrics have been featured on the website cowboypoetry.com. His poems have been published in Rattle magazine, a great compendium of anthology of poetry. Doc's spoken word album, The Great Divide, was named Cowboy Poetry CD of the Year by both the Western Music Association and the Academy of Western Artists. Doc's first book of cowboy poetry, Good Medicine, Read Two Poems and Call Me in the Morning, as was just mentioned, was named Cowboy Poetry Book of the Year. Doc Mill's latest CDs of original music include Tried and True and West of the 22, both released in 2022. In the words of John Chandler, a wonderful songwriter, he said, listening to Doc is like having Lyle Lovett in one ear and Tommy Smothers in the other. And that's for sure. And you can find out more about Doc on his website, which is his name, Doc Mel, M-E-H-L, as it's spelled on the screen. So I'm really happy that you guys made time to visit with us tonight. It's really wonderful to see you in person when we have that opportunity, but this is good too. So I have like 20-some questions, seriously, single-spaced on a page.
Well, I hope I have at least one good answer. That would be that I have a good answer.
And I'm pretty sure in the time that we have that we will get through just a fraction of them. So I'm going to just dive right into them. We'll see how far we get. And we've got some samples. We want to make sure listeners can hear some poems and a song. We get to that too. So we're going to just dive right through it. And I want to find out when, and I'm going to ask this to both of you. Doris, you can answer it first. And then Doc, you can chime in. When did you realize you were or wanted to be a writer?
Grade three, Mrs. Lawton gave us an assignment to write about the Arctic, a little paragraph using words like igloo, parka, kayak. And mine rhymed. And believe me, I was not a precocious child. It wasn't a brilliant poem, but the rhymes tumbled out of me as an 8-year-old. And building on that, I grew up in the country, and when we went to town was 300 people, so a very small village. Mm-hmm. And you can make all the jokes you want about that, but I look back now and think, wasn't I lucky? Because when you know everybody in town and around town, you soon become known as the kid who likes to write plays and skits and poems. And, well, call Wallace and Melba's daughter. She'll write a poem for so-and-so's wedding. Call the Dailies. they have a daughter that likes to write, and she'll write something for the church tea party. So I was writing from a very early age and encouraged from a very early age.
Okay. How about you, Doc?
A little different story. I got through writing in school, but unlike Doris, it wasn't my focus. And I played some music. I took up the guitar in middle adulthood and started writing a song or two. Really, poetry and cowboy poetry became a bit of my entrance into the world of poetry writing. And I'll tell you a brief version of that story. I went to the Colorado Cowboy Poetry Gathering one evening and really enjoyed it. Not sure how I'd learned about cowboy poetry, but I enjoyed it. Went home and some seed was germinated. And maybe 6 or 9 months later, I woke up at 4 in the morning and wrote a cowboy poem from beginning to end on the kitchen table. And I put my pencil down and thought, I haven't written a poem since grade school. Where did that come from?
Wow.
And that seed has grown. And so I've enjoyed that. And it's led me into some other writing as well.
Okay. So the next question would be, again, to both of you. And then this is going to lead into a poem that I know we're going to play. I've asked this to be played because I know there's a story behind it. And that is, where do you get your ideas? Where does inspiration come from? And then we're going to lead into I want to hear from both of you at some point, but we're going to lead into a poem that Doris wrote called April 1881 that I believe has a pretty good inspiration behind it.
Well, I'll start with, it is, I think we spend our lives observing the world. And I think a writer is looking for sparks. And so one of my early poems is titled Fence Post Made of Stone. And in central Kansas, they made fence posts out of the limestone because there were no trees. There was no wood. Well, I was driving my son back from college on the interstate highway at 75 miles an hour, and I watched these fence posts fly by, and I thought, I remember those. I remember climbing on those when we went to see the grandparents. And so that image then led me down the path of sort of rediscovering where those fence posts came from those early pioneers. So it was that little spark, a sort of a flash that says, what about me? Write about me. Write about this. And I think we both take pride in sort of paying attention and watching for sparks that enter our life like that.
I think Al just said something spot on for me, and that is pay attention. Unlike this guy, I don't get muses whispering in my ear and jotting down a poem. Oh, hooray, there it is. No. I work for every idea, and I work for every line and every poem. But I'm always paying attention. I'm paying attention at the coffee shop. I'm paying attention at a branding party. I'm paying attention as I myself read. I'm paying attention. This may sound odd, but the English language sometimes, maybe it's the same for you, Tom. You're a wordsmith. And so if I see a clever metaphor, I think, oh, golly, I'm challenged now to find my own metaphor. So I find inspiration all around me if I'm paying attention. And then the other thing in my world is in my writing life, in my Western writing life, I have many writing lives. In my cowboy poetry writing life, there's the page and there's the stage. Mm-hmm. And the page is the solitary part of my life where I am working really hard to try to write something right. And then there's the stage, which is walking out on stage in front of 50 or 500 people with, a repertoire, a set list. So I'm thinking all the time, funny, sad, long, short, current, contemporary, historical. So I'm also writing for that part of my life.
Okay. And so since we're talking about where the inspiration comes from, and I know because I've heard you introduce the poem 1881, with a little backstory. Why don't you talk a little bit about 1881, whether we want to hear it, and then you can talk about it, or why don't you introduce your poem.
I'll set it up, Tom. Well, I wrote it specifically, I think, for a project with another songwriter, Eli Barcy, with whom I do a lot of co-writing. and we presented a Vonna White getting the prop ready up there in the corner there. Thank you, Bobby G. Well, I wrote a project with Eli Barcy, poem song, poem song, poem song, about the contemporary rest and the historical rest. And part of our outline was to write about the trail. And the trail drives started in Texas. Many went as far north as Nebraska or even southern Dakota. And some came all the way up to where I live in Saskatchewan and Alberta. So hang on to that thought. The other part of the inspiration for this was that not every trail story is a happy story. Mm-hmm. The rollicking, swashbuckling, happy, you know, tearing through the night, rounding up the stampede, getting to the end of the trail, spending your money at the saloon. That was for some cowboys, but it wasn't for all cowboys. And some had a very sad ending. Many, many cowboys died crossing a river or in a stampede or because of the weather, or who knows why they didn't come back. So I wanted to try to capture the loneliness and the lonesomeness and the loss of trail life. And I'll say one more thing, and then maybe we can just play the poem and let it speak for itself. For me as a writer, getting the poem down on the pages is only step one. And then I go back and edit and rewrite and edit some more. So when listeners listen to this poem, I think they will, well, I hope they, it's a big story. The trail, the loss, what happens in the poem, I won't say any more than that. But it's a big, big story if you let your imagination run away with it. But the poem itself is short. And that's not how I wrote it. Believe me, it was much, much longer when I wrote it. But I go back and pare out everything that doesn't belong there till I'm left with the essence of what I think will tell the story. And just as an aside, Tom, you know this, when you write for the stage like we do, you have to be able to memorize it. So I'm not ever going to write anything long. my stories and my poems better fit on one page, because that's all my cranium can manage at a time. So here's the poem, Loss, Loneliness, Trail, a big story in a pared down language.
They say it was a great life. They say they felt like kings. They say they were invincible and rode with stardust wings. They talk about the glory days before the barbed wire came. The trails they rode in youth were all a wild and woolly game. They gather now in San Antone, where words and whiskey flow. And me? I have a memory, too, from 30 years ago. The meadowlarks were singing on a pretty April day. The air was fresh as cotton. The dawn was soft and gray. 3 other children sleeping when I found his scribbled words. He was gone for Ogallala with the wretched Texas herds. Just 10 days shy of birthday, he'd have turned 15 in May, and stories of the Chisholm Trail had stole his heart away. There was fortune in Nebraska underneath the northern sky, and I never even got the chance to kiss young Jim goodbye. His jacket needed mending, his boots not worth a song. There were biscuits in the pantry that he could have packed along. I might have sent a scrap of ribbon so he would not feel alone. I would have sewn $5 in his coat if I had known. He never liked the water. He knew he couldn't swim. But he would not shirk his duty, and the first to cross was Jim. The word came back from Wichita. I have the letter still. The trail boss wrote of courage, or you can call it what you will. That was back in 81, a time the cowboys praise. They chase the longhorns north again on trails of bygone days. And me? I long since moved back east. West Texas did me in. You talk of grit and fortitude, but words are mighty thin. I cuss the wind, lament the trail. I grieve the sacrifice. I'm just a cowboy's mother who paid too high a price. Thank you.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I'm glad glad people got to hear that. That's really wonderful. Question for Bobby and Jim. We're getting close to the bottom of the hour. Are we close enough to take a break, or do you want me to do a quick question?
Do a quick question.
I'm just curious. How do you know when a work is finished?
It's never finished. It's only abandoned.
Yeah, I was imagining you would say something similar to that. Yeah.
So eventually, I just get sick and tired of it all. Honestly, I'm not making flippant, but like I said, I work many, many hours. That poem we just heard, that's hours for me of writing a stanza that I don't know it at the time, but it's going to get chucked out. So do all of that. When I feel like the story stands on its own, and when I feel like I do then go out and walk all around town and walk on the roads all around town, memorizing it. And if it's not finished, I will know it as I hear myself. For me, in my work as a Western poet, I write for the page, for the stage, and also for the ear. So once I hear myself say it out loud several times, I will know whether it's done or not.
Okay. What about you, Al? Similar?
Yeah, similar, but I will say that quite a few poems that when we do write for the stage that we're going to present, and we memorize, and we have our first stage, and we present it, and we stumble once or twice, and then a second stage, we say, I still like this poem. It's going to be a keeper. I'm going to do it again, second time, third time. I've been fascinated that it's about a year of occasional recitations where my mouth and my brain have overruled my pen, and the words come out naturally that I never wrote. And so for me, somewhere around a year after I thought it was finished, I'm finally happy with how the words flow. And this, I think this is especially true on a poem that we know is going to be presented on a stage. It's harder for me to know when it's a poem that's only going to be in writing or in a book. It's much harder to know, is this one finished or not? You don't get the luxury of those recitations to sort of discover one more layer of the layer cake.
Yeah, I know that the answer to this would, I know the answer when you were in co-writing, like when you were working with Eli. But other than that, do you show your work in progress to anybody before it's done?
I don't even want anybody in the room before it's done. So it's a big X-nay for me. You'll try a song maybe.
A little bit, or maybe a song sometimes that there'll be, even a songwriter group where I'll say, I'm going to sing it for the first time. And maybe that's a place where I'll even sing it for the group before Doris has heard it. Because I'm still looking for the feedback like this. That second line of the second verse didn't work. And maybe the person giving you the feedback doesn't know why it didn't work, but in my brain I'm thinking, of course it works. I wrote it. It's finished. And so there is some feedback loop like that we crave, and yet it's a pretty private phenomenon to write it, to edit it. We do a little editing of each other's work, but it's late in the game. It's looking for just tiny little. We're not rewriting each other's work.
No.
We're just looking for a little massage or one word that didn't come true.
I'll just say, in my case, it better be a very little massage, not at all.
And like I said, she's allowed to edit my work late in the days. It doesn't always work the other way around.
before we go to the break, I'm wondering, Henry, might you have a question you might like to ask our guests?
Oh, gosh, I was enjoying their answers so
much. I know. But you're also a writer, and because you have deadline and only so many words allowed, I wondered if some of what they're talking about you might relate to as well.
Well, I absolutely do relate to it. And I have not in some years written much poetry, but I used to write quite a bit. And it really taught me to be so concise, because you can't have an extra syllable. You can't have an extra word or a rhyme that doesn't work. And it just made all of my writing afterwards so much more precise for that reason.
Yeah. Interesting.
Okay.
All right. Well, here's what I'd like to do. We're going to go to a commercial, and then I think when we come back, what I'd like to hear is three-quarter time.
Okay.
The Doris's poem, and we'll talk about that a little bit.
Okay, so Sam, we're going to do these back-to-back. The Out West Shop, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll come right back to three-quarter time.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
One, two, three, come and dance with me. Four, five, six, need a waltzing fix. Seven, eight, nine, what could be so fine? 10, 11, 12, twirl. One, two, three, fiddle harmony. Four, five, six, love those piano licks. Seven, eight, nine, love three-quarter time. 10, 11, 12, spin. One, two, three, whoopsie, pardon me. Four, five, six, darn it, fiddle sticks. Seven, eight, nine, missed a step that time. 10, 11, 12, sorry. One, two, three, Westphalia waltz and G. Four, five, six, spins and twirls and tricks. Seven, eight, nine, sweet as columbine. 10, 11, 12, glide. On the whole, I'll pass on rock and roll. R&B is not my cup of tea. Urban grunge is not Don Messer fare, but play a waltz, I'll float away on air. I'll pass on punk, but I'm very glad for one, two, three, thanks, Dad.
Yeah,
that's
wonderful. So this is really directed to Doris, you know, well, both of you really, but so cadence, meter, and rhyme is what I think you guys are quite well known for, but I know that's not all of what you write. So I'm curious, make any comment you want about that last poem, but that it's just, I love the cadence and the meter and the rhyme of that, but it's in a non-traditional form in terms of what we often think of as cowboy poetry. And you write so well in other genres and other forms. I was wondering, what else do you enjoy writing? And then I'm going to move to Doc, and I want to hear, we're going to hear a poem he wrote about a quilt in North Nebraska, and ask him some questions specifically about that, and then the co-writing that you all do. But tell me a little bit about what drew you to cadence and meter and rhyme, and how you prefer others.
Well, I will talk about all that by referring to that last poem, three-quarter time. I don't ever want to write the same poem twice, let alone three or four or five times. And there's only so many couplets, AA, BB, CC, and that's not wrong to write that way, and it's easy to memorize because there's your cue at the end of every line, but I like AB, AB, I like AA, BB, A. These are all technical things that poets, rhyming poets would know. But I want to, if I call myself a writer, well, then I have to write. So I don't want to write the same style of poem over and over again. So when I wanted to write something about my dad, and like every relationship, it was mostly sweet, sometimes complicated, but one thing that was never complicated was me dancing with my dad. And we just sailed across the dance floor, and waltzing was our thing. So to write something sentimental, I know that one is sentimental, but I love to do it because I can almost feel myself dancing with my dad. To write it in three-quarter time with a different cadence and a different rhyme scheme, and that sort of, not a jolt to the ear, but slide, turn, well, glide rhymes with slide, and that was accidental. But the whole thing was set up to be different from a usual rhymed and metered Western 4/4 poem. So I like the challenge of writing in different styles. And late, I'm working on a new book called, the working title is Lucky Me. And it's all kinds of poems that I write in response to the news in response to a headline, in response to emotions, in response to our little poetry group here in our wee little town. We do a lot of ectographs, which I think is a fancy word meaning write something that this photo inspires you to write. Mm-hmm. So I've got a whole swack of those that are being compiled. The working title is Lucky Me, and Al has given me the little banner underneath, which is going to be all the ones that don't rhyme.
And Tom, I'll speak to that too, because in my poetry world, the rhyme has been my entry into it in the cowboy poetry genre. And cowboy poetry in its history was storytelling by the fire, and the rhyme was a tool that helped people remember the story. And it did have a relatively simple rhyming structure, perhaps in its origins, spoken by the fire by young men who were likely illiterate, but could tell a story, form a rhyme. And so much of mine falls into that rhyming, that overly simple rhyming scheme and couplet after couplet. And that's been a stepping stone for me along a journey that now sees me writing some poems in a free verse manner, which I find terribly hard. And you might say that sounds like the reverse. It should be easy. You don't even have to rhyme. Maybe Henry can relate to this when he's writing a column that has a word limit. The Puritans in Salem, Massachusetts, back when, they had a saying, freedom from submission. And when I first heard that, I thought, that's terrible. But it meant structure gave them freedom to create within very structured life. Well, an 800-word column or a poem that rhymes is a structure that releases us to do something creative within that structure. It's a ladder that we get to climb on. So so I find it a real challenge to then move from that into the world of poetry that now depends on a use of language that's so creative it no longer requires the ladder. And that's a big challenge. So Doris is further along that path than I ever will be.
Well, one of the things that I certainly observed and enjoyed about your award-winning book, Good Medicine, is that it's full
Tom, I'm just going to interrupt you there. Was Doc's the only book that won something that year?
No, that was well covered earlier. We tied. We were both named Cowboy Poetry Book of the Year. But this is your show. This is you're the guest, and I'm not talking about me. But it's full of this variety, right? There's rhymed and metered traditional form poetry, and then I turn a page and I actually am reading haiku, and I'm reading Shakespearean sonnets, and I'm reading poems like this that are made up of little cut out pieces of paper that might have been random that you turned into something wonderful. And I love the, you're describing the challenge of that. I'm looking at that going, well, wouldn't that be wonderfully freeing and to explore all manners of creative writing. You describe, your writing has been described as West eclectic, which I think is a combination of maybe the music and the, how do you describe West eclectic?
I much of what I've been writing comes from this Western theme. I'm moving a little bit more into something you might call folk and folk music, but that Western theme, Bobby, you and Jim know that on your show, my music doesn't sound like every other Western song, and there's a twist or there's a quirk or maybe it's about a stupid dog or the Western theme has been a beautiful stepping stone for me. And yet what I turn out doesn't sound like three old fashioned cowboys around the campfire, at least not quite. And so maybe that word tries to capture a little bit that at a Western show, you're going to hear a little different worm in your ear when Doc Bell's on stage.
All right. Well, speaking of hearing, and before we run out of time, let's hear, and maybe we can just hear them one after the other, a poem, A Quilt in North Nebraska, which stuck out to me because my half of my family's from North Nebraska, and I read that with great interest. And then a song, Simple Pleasures, that you guys co-wrote. So why don't we hear those, and then you can talk talk to those, and maybe a little bit about the co-writing process. So we'll hear a sample of Doc Mel and a song written by Doc and Doris.
There's a quilt in North Nebraska that's been sown into the land. Rolling grass fields are the fabric, and the batting's made of sand. It's been trimmed at the horizon where it's pinned against the sky. Every stock tank is a button. Every windmill is a tie. And the runs of old barbed wire, they are the braided threads with which nimble fingers sew a pattern. Every fence post is a stitch. Each square tells a family story sewn inside a boundary fence. That quilt chronicles a history about the trials of sustenance. Formed of fabric from those lives, that quilt will shield us from the storm. Daytime's tapestry breathes beauty. Come the night, 'twill keep us warm. Pieced a broad mosaic patchwork, 'tis a blend of life and line. I should think that some great spirit had a hand in the design. Most folks picture the Almighty in the image of a man, but if judging by that quilt, I'd say God has a woman's hands. That's the film for me. And the Sunday crossword puzzle always suits me to a T. When it comes to sipping vino, I prefer a complex blend. Baby, for me, that's where complicated ends. The day is done, the winter sun is sinking low. The moon comes up, our loving cup begins to overflow. Your hand in mine, two hearts align. Life brings the best of simple things whenever I'm with you. A shooting star, this old guitar, and you. A Christmas tree, a pot of tea, or two. When you come walking through the door, baby, I want nothing more than life's simple pleasure. And you, 'cause my best treasures are simple pleasures. Living in the moment, savoring the ride. No matter what life brings, sharing simple things, just you and me, hand in hand, side by side. A sugar fix.
Yeah, well, wonderful. Wonderful.
Great.
Looking at the clock.
I know.
We're running out of time.
We are running out of time.
Do you want to wrap it up, Bobby Jean? Or I know we want to make sure that we let listeners know how to find their works. Mm. I don't know if we have time for one more quick question, which would just be, is there anything else you're working on? You mentioned a book that you're working on, Doris, that will be out. When do you imagine?
Next Christmas. September.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. But for now, you've got this wonderful book. This wonderful book, and Doc has this wonderful book and your other previous publications and recordings.
Just before we wrap, I'll just jump in and say the songwriting collaboration thing. Mm-hmm. I love that. Love, 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 love that. I do the lyrics and I just hand it over to Doc and say, I don't give him any melody. I just say, snappy, moody, swingy, melancholy, give him adjectives and he tries to find the tune that matches. But Tom, you're a Western writer, a cowboy poet. So when you or me or anybody of us in that world, when I walk out on stage, I am me. I am Doris Daly, grew up on a ranch, not an actor, not putting on a costume. I tell you stories and poems from my life. But when I get to be a songwriter and write the lyrics, I can be a cowboy riding on the range. I can be a grandpa looking back on life. Now, Simple Pleasures is about us, obviously. Yeah. But, oh, man, it's very liberating. It's the closest that I come to kind of fiction writing because I can be anybody I want in a song.
Well, we're going to jump in real quick to say, Doris, we will always be indebted to you. We'll never forget the first time we met you, along with Eli Barcy and Joni Harms. You did a live concert in our store. You were the very first. You started our SCVTV concert series. We didn't know at the time what all you had started for us. We had not met you yet. We knew the other two wonderful ladies, singer-songwriters, and we have been huge fans of yours since 2009 when we finally got
well,
to meet.
Well, back to you both. Huge fans of yours and yours, Tom. And Henry, you too.
Thank you.
So we will kind of wrap this right now, Tom, if that's okay. We have the websites. They are their names, Doris Daly, Daly, D-A-L-E-Y, DorisDaly.com, DocMel, M-E-H-L.com, Tom, the Oregon Cowboy Poet.com, and Henry, you can say yours faster than I ever could. What's your website?
www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Well done.
Next week's guest, we're just going to say real quick, we're so delighted. This is a friend of ours, lives right here in Albuquerque, and she's written a series of children's books, ideal for gift giving, Barbara Ault. We will talk with her about Rose and Lily and Violet. She has a really interesting story behind these books. She's our guest next week. We have a quote.
We have a quote indeed. This is from Tony Horman, and he says, you write for two people, yourself and your audience, who are usually better educated and at least as smart.
And we wish all of you a wonderful holiday season. We can't believe this is December 1st. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And we hope that you'll consider coming on back. Tom, we really thank you for setting this up tonight.
Thanks,
and taking the lead. Tom. Yeah, it was fun.
Thanks,
it's just kind of fun to ride along, right, Henry?
Great job.
Absolutely.
So thank you to all of you that are tuned in on Facebook Live or who will pick up the podcast in the very near future. Henry, thank you for being with us. And I think we'll see you in the new year.
Look forward to it.
And so on behalf of Jim and me and Sam at LA Talk Radio, we say
it's always a great day out west.
It's always a great day out west. Thank you.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.